B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Armored Saint's John Bush joins me today. Their new record, Punching the Sky, drops on October 23rd. We talk a lot about the record, the writing process, and even the fact that the band has been around at its core for over 30 years.
Better or worse, yeah. Believe me, it's not always easy. We're certainly not robots. We don't all have the same exact thought process when it comes to how we want to do things. And
of course, we had to talk about his time in Anthrax. Was it a hard decision to join the band?
No, it was a hard decision because, again, the loyalty to Armored Saint is like some kind of weird mob oath or something. But
we talked about touring with the legendary band Pantera and, of course, the Abbott Brothers.
Yeah, well, you know, they were good guys. They were just Texas, all Texas, all hard, and I miss those guys a lot. And, you know, they lived life to the fullest. There was no mincing words there about Pantera.
I know John gets asked about this all the time, but he could have been the singer for Metallica.
Like I always say, nobody was intended to ever sing any Metallica song other than James. It's just the way it was supposed to pan out.
That's just the tip of the iceberg as far as many topics we cover today with Armored Saint's John Bush on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock.
Talkin' Rock.
Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Great conversation today with Armored Saint's John Bush. Of course, a huge history in the rock world. And like my friend Jay Rustin said, he's produced and worked with the band several years. He says he's really one of the best singers ever. And John Bush's voice and the band just sounds so great. The new stuff right now that they put out from the Punch in the Sky album, which drops on October 23rd, is so killer. End of the Attention Span. Standing on the Shoulders of Giants. There's a couple tracks they've released so far. They just sound just amazing. So looking forward to hearing this complete album, like I said, coming up on the 23rd of October. Real fast, thank you to my friend Tim McClinchy, local guy right here in the Motor City. He's my friend slash lawyer, and he knows a lot of these guys. And he actually got me in touch with John, who I haven't interviewed in almost three decades. We'll get to that coming up here in just a few minutes. But later on at the end of the interview, he gives me some hockey dad advice, which is pretty cool. I've got questions from David Ellison from Megadeth, Frankie Bello from Anthrax as well, coming up here in just a bit too. So, of course, we'll talk about, you know, the Metallica stuff and that kind of thing, favorite memories from Anthrax and so on and so forth. So John Bush today from Armored Saint on Talking Rock. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I was telling somebody on my phone this morning, actually, that the last time I saw you, and I don't expect you to remember this, but it was about 28 or 29 years ago, and you were playing our anniversary show at a radio station I worked at in Buffalo that was an AM heavy metal station, and I'll never forget what you said to me because we only survived for a year, and we were actually going off the air that night, and you said to me, what are you going to do with that great voice of yours? And here I am in 2020 interviewing you after being in Detroit for 25 years.
So you made the adjustment. That was awesome.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, that's funny. An AM radio show, was it... that might have been the last time we actually played Buffalo because it's been a long time. Was it the one club was kind of had a bunch of like a beach vibe, sand outside?
Yeah, outside. It was right by the airport. It was called Sinbad's, and you guys played there with The Scream with John Corabi.
Oh, wow. How wild. Yeah, I think that was the last time we actually played Buffalo, which is a shame because we need to get back there. But I'm glad you got another job.
Yeah, you know, I worked I went around Buffalo for a couple of years, then came to Detroit in 1995. So I'm coming up on my 25th anniversary here in about a month or so. So I guess all's well that ends well. So, but you guys,
right.
you guys have
a nice voice.
Oh, thanks, man. Dude, appreciate it. Likewise, for sure. But thanks. So Punch in the Sky is coming out October 23rd. And just listening to some of the tracks, man, just some great stuff. First of all, you have kids, right?
I do. I have two teens now.
Okay, teens. So, I mean, finding the end of the attention span, I mean.
Yeah, they're good. They're good to go to for research, that's for sure.
So I have two teenage kids, too. I think mine might be a little bit older. Mine are entering their late teens. But talk about some of the songs you've released from this record so far.
Well, that's a great one. End of the Attention Span was the first video that we put out. It came out in mid-August, so the video ended up coming out excellent. We were overjoyed with the way that the guy Robert did it, and it, you know, it's a little social commentary on what's happening here on the earth in terms of all these digital tools that we use for everyday life. And some of it's just me poking fun, really. The song kind of leans to be an intense topic, but at the same time, I try to find some humor in it as well. And I'm certainly not only looking at everybody out there in the world and all the teens who I think have a limited attention span due to this. I'm the same. I have problems with it too. I have my wife yelling at John, trying to get my attention when I'm texting somebody. So I'm part of that as well. But it's a great song. It came out awesome. The new video that we just put out last week, as a matter of fact, it's like a week old now, is the first song on the record. It's called Standing on the Shoulders of Giants. Different vibe. A little more epic-y type tune, has this cool pipes intro that sets the mood of the song, and then goes into the track, and it's just kind of a classic Armored Saint epic type song. And then we have some other tunes that people will hear when they hear the record. A song called Bubble, a song called Lone Wolf, a song called Never You Fret, Missile to Gun. There's a lot of diversity on the record. Some solid rockers that just kind of punch you in the face, and then we have some other deeper tracks that get a little bit more crafty with arrangements, but we're real proud of it. We think it came out excellent.
Yeah, so the song just mentioned, Stand on the Shoulder of Giants, by the way, what a great way to start a record out, like you said. It's kind of that epic Armored Saint feel, but that's where the line Punch in the Sky comes from.
Correct. That's the first song of the record. It's the first song, the first lyric that you hear. Yeah, I was actually apprehensive of starting the album originally with that because it's the longest song on the album, and I do love the song. I think it's great. It kind of really exemplifies what the record is all about, and you know, it sounds like a kind of just a classic Armored Saint type song, but it was long, and Joey said, you know what? We got to hit them hard with this song. This should be the first song. And then, ironically, that is the first lyric, and we decided that was going to be the title of the record. So I'm a big sports fan. You know, I always respect all the teams that come out of the Motown area, whether it's the Wings or even the Pistons, who I've hated through the years because I'm a Celtics fan, but I have respect for. And obviously, you know, the Tigers. I even go back to my Kirk Gibson days, him playing on the Tigers. I love that you know, team. And, you know, sports is just a strong feeling for being victorious. And when you do, you kind of raise your arm. And it's kind of the same mentality that we have when we feel like we accomplished putting out a record and playing songs live and the crowd going nuts and raising your arm and kind of in a kind of solidarity, victorious feeling. And that's kind of what we went with on the title of the record.
Yeah, I've had a chance to brush elbows with Kirk Gibson a few times over my two-plus decades here, including with John 5 back in January, which was probably one of the last concerts I went to. Kirk Gibson was there, so that was pretty cool.
Oh, wow. Is he a metalhead?
Yeah, well, him and John are friends, so we kind of hung out for a little while and stuff, and it was really cool. I got this really cool picture of, do you know John?
I know of him. I don't know him personally. I don't know if we've actually officially met, but certainly know, of course, who he is.
Well, he's from here, and so him and his sister were there sitting next to Kirk Gibson, and I guess John's sister's husband got this really cool picture, so I blew it up and framed it and sent it out to him in Los Angeles and stuff because I just thought it was so cool that they were all just kind of hanging out. But, the end of the attention span. Now, let's get back to that song real fast. So are you one of these guys that when you're watching over the crowd and stuff and you see everybody with their camera phones and stuff, does that bother you? Does that not bother you? Does it matter either way or what?
Well, as I've been saying in certain interviews, that I'm always grateful when I want to go back and reference a show or see if we played a song at a certain gig. You can literally type into YouTube, you know, Armored Saint, Detroit, 2014, and you'll find the show. So I am grateful for people who record shows. Of course, I find a little humor or a little opportunity for ball busting when I see somebody maybe in the fourth row and they're not even really looking at the stage and they're just kind of looking through their phone, and I'm thinking, dude, you're filming it and that's cool, but you're looking through your phone and it's this tiny screen. You got it. You set it up. You got the shot. You know, nobody here. It's like everybody's a pro bootlegger these days. But, you know, I find humor in it. It's not something that makes me mad, of course. You know, if somebody is in the crowd using their phone as a way to be distracted from the show, taking selfies, blah, 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 then I'd probably be annoyed because, of course, you want people to be viewing the show that
right.
you're performing. And
right.
I've seen that numerous times where it's more important for people to actually document that they were somewhere than actually watching the show. And I think that's offensive to musicians and the people who are performing. And I think people would probably agree with me. But in terms of having all these live performances, and that's really cool. So, again, don't get me wrong. There's amazing aspects of technology that I utilize every single day that we all do. By the same token, sometimes I think it overwhelms us, and I do get a little concerned about the future generations, especially our kids, our teenagers, and because that's how they're growing up, and how will that affect them? I don't know. Somehow I think that there will be some negative effects of it, but I don't know yet.
Yeah. You know, with this record coming out and stuff, I was thinking about this earlier that I interview a lot of bands, and a lot of bands, you know, go through members, you know, their whole career, but you guys have pretty much stayed true. What is, like, the key to keep an Armored Saint and all the members happy and moving forward every single year?
Well, obviously, health would be a factor because if somebody is unhealthy, that would be probably not a way for them to continue on. So we've been knock on wood here. I'm doing that on a desk.
Yeah.
That we've had pretty good luck with health. Obviously, Dave Pritchard died back in the 80s
right.
With his battle of leukemia, which was a pretty devastating circumstance back then. And certainly his life was cut short. He lived to 26 and had so much more to give. But nobody said life is fair, obviously, but we've been pretty fortunate, and I really kind of use that as a major kind of flag waving in regards to Armored Saint, because it is the same guys. It's you know, it's Gonzo, Joey Vera, me, Phil Sandoval, and Jeff Duncan, who Jeff came in and really the recording of Symbol of Salvation, even a little bit before that, and the writing process of that. So he's been there since 88, and, you know, we're now 2020, so he's the new guy. But, you know, it's a kind of a beautiful thing, I think, because whenever songs are put out or records are recorded or old songs played live, everybody feels a connection to them to some degree, somehow, some way, because everyone's been part of it. And it's not just Joey Vera and the two dudes from, you know, Buffalo and this other guy who was another band in the 90s. You know, everybody has a connection to Armored Saint in this group. It's a very family-orientated feeling, and we really think that's a special thing about the band. So I love it.
Yeah, I guess, like, in certain ways, it always reminded me of when Nikki Sixx would say, man, we were like a gang out there, because it was those four guys, and pretty much it is you five guys out there. You guys are like the Armored Saint gang that's gone through the ups and downs for the last 30 years together, and 30-plus
years. Yeah, for better or worse.
Yeah.
Believe me, it's not always easy. We're certainly not robots. We don't all have the same exact thought process when it comes to how we want to do things, and we're individuals, and there's a lot of history there, and sometimes it gets a little bit aggro at times just to get everybody on the same page. But in the end, I think it's a really special aspect of the band.
So when Dave passes away, you guys kind of put you did that tour and stuff. You finished up that record. And then, of course, Anthrax came calling. You've probably answered this a million times. But, I mean, easy decision, hard decision? Was it? Did you hop right on it or what?
No, it was a hard decision because, again, the loyalty to Armored Saint is like some kind of weird mob oath or something. But it wasn't easy because I knew I was fleeing the band in a sense and leaving them kind of hanging. And right after this record that we put everything into, and especially after Dave died. But in retrospect, it was the decision that I had to make. I cherish my years in Anthrax, and I just felt like at that time it was something that it was like a magnet pulling me in, and I had to go. We had a period of time where we were, well, I guess, dormant, if you will, and then we came back, and then we put out records ever since. So, of course, the other guys in the band would have a little different perspective than me, but I really believe that was something that I had to do in my life.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, those records were so great, too, with Anthrax. I mean, I just loved them when he came out. And you know, now you're talking about, I just saw something about a possible, like, maybe solo tour coming up in a couple years to kind of, as far as your whole career is concerned.
Well, I don't know. It's something that I talked about to a good friend of mine who happens to be the booking agent of the band, and it was something that when there was some downtime, we kind of threw some feelers out there about it. It's not something that I'm yearning to do, so to speak, but I'm open to it if it comes around to it. We'll see what happens. I think 2023 would be the anniversary of Sound of White Noise for 30 years, so yeah. Perhaps we could do something in conjunction with that. And then We've Come For You All actually came out 10 years after that, so there's an anniversary there, if you will. But, we'll see. It's just like a lot of things in life. It's about timing, and if something seems to work and seem like the right time, perhaps it can happen. It means putting something together, and I've kind of alluded to me being a little lazy when it comes to that, because as much as I'm the singer of a band, I'm not really the classic leader. It's more Joey Vera, actually, who's the leader of Armored Saint. So I'd have to kind of put on a different hat and tackle that. But I think I could do it in the end, I'm sure.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I saw, actually, we were talking about this before we started with Tim McClinchy. You got to thank him for getting this whole interview lined up. He's like my lawyer. My lawyer and my friend here in Detroit. But we saw the spoken word with Scott Ian a couple of years ago. And I got to be honest, man, it was really riveting, and Scott did a great job. Maybe you could do some, like, storytelling type thing, or maybe even bring Scott into it to open up for you.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, Scott, he loves to talk, and he has a lot of stories, and he's eloquent the way he speaks, and, he has had a lot of rock and roll life to use as references, so... those are always really good, and he injects a lot of humor in it, so it's fun to watch.
Yeah. You've probably been asked this a billion times, too, and I apologize, but I'm just amuse me or whatever. But what was your highlight in Anthrax? I think I know, but what do you think it was?
Well, there was a lot of amazing accomplishments, I think. Obviously some great touring. Making the four records of original material was something that I always cherish. Playing... I got to go to Japan for the first time in my life, South America for the first time in my life. So it opened my eyes to being able to travel and see a lot of the world. Playing with these guys who are amazing musicians, and anytime you play with different people, it kind of just opens the door to something inside your own abilities. So, and Scott and Frankie and Charlie, they're really talented guys, and playing with them is just more people to just kind of hone your own craft in a better way. So all those things were great. Those little tidbits, being on news radio was a fun thing that we did. I did the Beavis and Butthead thing was for the song that was on the soundtrack, where we actually got in the studio with Mike Judge and kind of did a little skit. I mean, those are real treasured memories.
By the way, Frank, this is the part where we do the questions with Meltdown's friends. And so Frank Bello sends his love to you and your family.
All right, Frankie.
And he says the new Armored Saint kicks ass. Those are his words. And he says, ask him about the story of driving a forklift buzzed after a Pantera show.
That's funny. I just saw Rita, actually, just recently, Dimes' girl from back in the day. And, there was a tour we did with Pantera, and obviously, alcohol is a factor. And
I find that hard to believe, by the way, but
yeah,
go ahead.
Right.
Keep going.
Of course. And there was a forklift that was probably putting gear on the stage or something, and I probably was Frankie's coaxing, because he would do that. He would kind of go do that. And, I was already pretty buzzed and vulnerable anyway, so I was like, all right. And then I got in it, and then I started driving it, probably chasing some people. And the problem was there was these giant panels that were separating, I guess, parts of the venue, keeping it, where the fans were in one section and the backstage is another. And they were probably 30 feet high that were on this kind of this track or something. And I was driving towards it, and I could have probably hit it. And if I did hit it, it could have certainly fallen, and people were on the other side of it. So I could have probably injured a lot of people, and who knows to how badly they could have gotten hurt. But I remember the tour manager or the production guy coming and screaming at me from Pantera, get the heck off that thing. What are you doing? Like, I mean, it was a dumb decision, of course. But of course, as years go past, it's was funny. But at the time, it could have been really bad, but I'm surprised we didn't get kicked off the tour because of it, because it was, they were pretty pissed off. I mean, the band wasn't. Of course, Dimebag and, you know, Vinny, and they thought it was hilarious, but, you know, luckily nothing really badly happened, but that's a good memory.
Yeah, how many drinks do you think you had with those guys on that tour?
Well, it was just mandatory. You had to. Yeah. There was no saying no. It was just the way it was. It was almost like some crazy peer pressure of, you're drinking. Okay. I had no choice. So there was, like, preparation to go on that tour mentally. It's like, I better be ready to drink a lot. Not, I better be ready to do a great show and sing well. I better be ready to drink a lot. So you had to kind of do some prep work for it.
Man, I had so many friends of mine that tell me they would pull the Irish exit trying to avoid, you know, VP and a Dime after shows, you know, or they, after like 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m., they're trying to avoid these guys, you know, just on their bus or whatever, so.
Yeah, well, you know, they just, they were good guys. They were just Texas, all Texas, all hard, and I miss those guys a lot, and you know, they lived life to the fullest. There was no mincing words there about Pantera. They were who they were. They lived it. They bleeded it. It came out of all their pores. And whether it was booze or heavy metal or passion, they had it. And you know, I respect them immensely for that.
Dave Ellefson texted me. He says, ask him about the Metallica Wasp Armored Saint tour of 84-85. What was about that?
That was an awesome tour. Still to this day, it's kind of looked at as a legendary metal tour. We did a good run all over the country. Let's see, what did we play? We played the Royal Oak Theater in Detroit. We played Buffalo as well, your old stomping grounds, at a place called the Salty Dog.
Is that the one that's not the one where you guys got snowed in, was it?
That was the one we got snowed in. As a matter of fact, we had to stay in Buffalo for like 2 to 3 days because we couldn't literally get out. Then we got a police escort out of town to go to the next venue, wherever it was.
That's a legendary show, yeah.
It really was. It was on a Super Bowl Sunday. I remember that distinctly. I can't remember. I think it was the Dolphins and Niners. I have good long-term memory. I couldn't tell you what I did like an hour ago, but I'm good. I could tell stories. But yeah, that was a great run. You know, it was Ride the Lightning from Metallica, March of the Saint, the first Wasp album, and we were all just out there and killing it. It was a great tour, and we're having a lot of fun, and every show was packed, and it was a great thing that kind of really propelled all the bands, especially Metallica, but you know, everybody really benefited from that, and we had a lot of fun.
Now, when did you sang the Four Horsemen with Metallica on stage somewhere, right?
That's right. The 30-year anniversary shows in Fillmore in San Francisco.
That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, how'd that feel?
Well, that was amazing. You know, they asked us that they only played four shows, and they had guests come up throughout the whole 4 days. And the day we played, Lou Reed was there, who's now gone, and the King Diamond and some of the guests from Merciful Fate, and Kid Rock was there, Detroit own there.
Yeah.
And it was great. Armored Saint opened the show. It was really fun, and we were very pleased that they asked us to do it and honored. And then they said, we should have you do the song so we can kind of make the joke that, hey, this is what it would have sounded like if John actually did join Metallica, which I to forever have to discuss for the rest of my... You were the guy who said no to Metallica, moron! No, sorry. It was meant to be, but like I always say, nobody was intended to ever sing any Metallica song other than James. It's just the way it was supposed to pan out. But it was fun. It was a really, like I said, it's kind of just amazing memory for me. And we played that song. It was killer. The crowd went nuts, and it was fun. And you know, they're the rock gods, the biggest band in the world. What can you say?
Yeah, you know, it's funny what you just said that because I've always felt that, as far as I'm concerned, James Hetfield is like the epitome of like maybe the greatest rock star on the planet. And if he wasn't singing, I don't know if he would like be missing something. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if I could say that.
Well, I saw James one of the earliest shows here in Los Angeles, opening for Saxon, the Whiskey A Go Go, and you know, James was just singing. He wasn't even playing guitar at that point. It was in Mustaine. It was Ron McGovney on bass, and of course Lars. But it was a great gig. Well, they were kind of mediocre, but you know, they were very young and it was new. And like I said, James was just still singing at that point. And I always say that the amount of progress that James Hetfield made as a singer, when you listen to, say, Ride the Light, I mean, Kill 'Em All, too, just say the Black Album, was just enormous.
Yeah.
He really became an amazing singer, actually quite underrated. And, that's all you really want to do as a musician and as a songwriter, is to show lots of progress. I think that's key. That's what we try to do in Armored Saint. We feel like... You know, I love our first album, but from there to now, I feel like we've made just enormous strides in progress as writers and musicians, and I think that's what you want to do. You want to keep getting better and keep growing, and those guys did that, and yeah, that's what we, like I said, we yearn to do that in Armored Saint. We want to just become a better band and better musicians, and you know, that's I guess that's normal. Of course, everybody, you don't want to get worse, but that's kind of... But not everybody can do it. Sometimes you peter out, you know, after an album or two, and it's not easy to keep fighting in this crazy industry that is rock and roll. But I think we do it very well. I'm real proud of Armored Saint and all the progress we've made through the years.
So Jay Rustin is a friend, and he said that you are one of the best singers ever.
Well, I don't know about that, you know.
That's what he told me.
I'm not making
this up, man.
Well, that's nice. Jay's amazing. He makes me sound great because he's mixed the last two records for us, and he's just incredible. He knows what he's doing behind the board, and he propels me to sound like the beast that I can become, and that's be a little peepsqueak over here, but he makes me sound great, and I'm really that's very nice words from Jay. You know, I think for me it's more about creating a distinct sound and being unique than being this incredible, you know, 4-octave range. I don't know what I can do. I just know that my favorite singers were people that sounded incredibly original. That's from, you know, Plant to Bon Scott to Rob Halford to, you know, Marvin Gaye. You know, I just want speak. I want people to hear it and go, that's Bush, and that's, to me, the most important thing. As far as all the other little nooks and crannies of my ability, I don't know. I just know I got to keep singing, and after we're done with these interviews, I'm going to do some work because I got to just keep the voice in shape.
No, I'll tell you what, your singing's so amazing. And like when you joined Anthrax, I always thought that gave the band like just another element. It just, you kind of changed the sound of that band, and not in a bad way, like in a really good way. It became like a different band almost.
Well, that happens, you know. You change singers, it's going to change the sound of a band. It's just a normal thing. Obviously, you know, it's a different voice. It's not like a guitar playing or bass playing. Of course, that will change things too, but the voice is just super distinctive. So for years, I think we kind of fought it, saying, oh, it's the same band, but really it was a little bit of a different form of Anthrax when I joined, because it was my voice, and that's just the way things go. But it's, you know, it's just, it's, to me, it was just a different, like I said, different persona of the group, showed different colors. And, you know, I always tell people you can be a fan of Joey Belladonna and still like John Bush era stuff. And you can choose what you like better. And that's, I understand it fine. You know, it's hard to compete with Joey's era because they were just more successful as far as selling records, really, quite frankly. But you know, I think that there's all those records I'm proud of, and people can go back and listen and probably get something out of it even to this day.
Well, you came into the band in Anthrax in a really, really bizarre time in the industry of rock and roll, in the history of rock and roll, in the 90s with the grunge era.
Yeah, things were changing. They were morphing, you know. Obviously, the 80s was kind of being kind of ushered out, and there were some amazing groups in the 90s that just were ready to take over, you know, Alice in Chains and Faith No More, and obviously like Soundgarden. These are groups that to this day are some of the best hard rock groups in the world ever, as far as I'm concerned. So it was time. It was a time for a new face for rock, and I embraced it, and you know, it kind of motivated us to say, hey, well, let's, you know, we weren't looking at these bands as trying to emulate them by any means, but I think it was a push to say, let's branch out and grow as well. And, you know, again, I totally just support that, because you, like I said earlier, you just always want to be growing. You don't want to lose the roots of what you are. And I think that's the key thing. And we, you know, you always want to make sure that you stay grounded in what you originally were, but you want to show growth. It's like a tree, you know, a tree is growing and got the roots solid in the ground, but then, you know, the branches grow and then there's new trees and new insects. I know it sounds kind of goofy and metaphoric, but, you know, that's how I see it. I see it like that. It's like a big giant tree. And then you have this giant redwood and it's even more powerful.
So a couple of final things here for you. You just mentioned Rob Helford. So I'm reading his book because I'm going to be talking to him next week. His book drops next week. What drew you to Rob Helford?
Well, there's no singer like Rob. I mean, he's one of those guys I was talking about as far as having this incredible voice with all this kind of just talent behind it and probably multiple octaves and who knows. And nobody could scream like Rob. He was a reason thousands of singers, you know, try to do it, and few could like him. But, you know, he was a big inspiration trying to kind of emulate his voice in the early days and trying to sing in all the different ways he did. Not only was he an amazing screamer, but he could sing low and sing something soft, and it was equally as impactful. And I think, you know, he arguably one of the greatest rock singers of all time, in not just heavy metal, but just rock. I mean, few people could do what he could do, and he's up there for me, top three at least, for sure. You know, it's kind of hard to squeeze all these amazing guys into those three spaces. So I don't even like doing that. But, but you know, I mean, Stained Glass, Hellbent for Leather, Unleashed in the East. I mean, those are records that I kind of grew up on discovering rock and roll and heavy metal, and it just catapulted my views on music into a whole nother realm.
All right, so a final thing here for you. So I'm a hockey dad, you're a hockey dad. So what's the best advice you give to somebody who's a hockey dad?
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, I think that youth hockey parents are some of the most insane people I've ever met in my life, and I'm not even kidding. I'm really serious about that. I've been in the music business since I was 18, really making records, right, since 1983, And, you know, this is the music business. Everybody says that's a really, you know, crazy, corrupt, harsh business. Youth hockey is worse. It really is. It's worse. So I'm going to leave tomorrow to go to Denver. My son has a tournament this weekend. He plays he's going into Bantam, which is when checking began. So we'll see what he does. He's a small kid, but he's really tough, and he's a really fast player. And I'm excited. We're always super supportive of his hockey career. And my daughter plays roller derby. I got to say that because her coach was getting, or the president of the organization that she belongs to was getting pissed, going, "You're only talking about hockey. You got to talk about derby." And roller derby is equally as amazing. There's some great teams, and their team was number one in the world actually last year, my daughter's team. So both my kids play these kind of rough and tough sports, which is funny because they're both small and very athletic, but very talented. But yeah, it's great. You know, I support them. I just connect a lot of music with sports. There's that same kind of exuberance and jubilation from the fans of a rock show, as well as going to like a Leafs game. I mean, not Leafs game, Wings game. Sorry, caught myself there.
Well, either Leafs too, I suppose. So
yeah. Well, the Leafs are close. You know, Toronto's close to Detroit, but you know, it's that same passion that people have with sports and music, and I feel the same. So I support my kids in that world. It's just sometimes the parents, you know, I got to, like, arm's distance at times, because I can find myself yelling and being a lunatic and going, "Dude, what are you doing?" So,
well, anyway. Like I always tell everybody, what are they doing? They're being 13-year-old boys. That's what they do.
Not them, the parents.
The parents. Yeah, well, that's why I learned a long time ago, even before my son started. One of my buddies that played in the NHL, his son came here to a tournament, and I sat like kind of with the other parents, and that's when I decided I will never sit with the parents. So I kind of sit off on the glass, but with maybe a couple parents. That's it. I don't want to hear what the other parents have to say.
No, I mean, it's really that insane. You know, I'm sure that's, you know, same with baseball, and certainly I'm sure with football. That's very passionate. And it's just funny because at some point you kind of have to go, these are kids.
Yeah.
These are kids.
Right.
I get caught up in it too. But, you know, that's, like I said, it's just a whole kind of weird, crazy youth sport world. And You know, you kind of have to get a clue about the reality that it's just kids playing sports.
You know? Well, you know, I'm 5'6", and so I grew up playing hockey, and the coach told
that's
me,
awesome.
Yeah, the coach told me one time, as a matter of fact, I played this morning. That's how much I play. I play all the time.
Great. Awesome.
But my coach told me one time when I was a kid, he said, they can't hit you if they can't catch you. So there's some advice to pass along to your son, which he may have heard already. So,
well, you got to use what you got. You know, I'm a small guy too. I still play a weekly pickup basketball game, which I love. Unfortunately, it's been cut short by what's happening with the whole COVID thing, but I miss playing basketball as much as I miss almost performing, and so I'm really bummed, and it's a way to keep me, you know, healthy and is kind of keep the body and blood flow going. But yeah, you need to utilize your strengths, and if you're small, you better be fast and have a good shot or something. Because you can't hit people as hard because you're not going to be able to do that. But you got to utilize the abilities that you do have. So that was good advice.
Yeah, it's some of my favorite memories and moments are watching my kids play hockey over anything I've even done. Chris Chelios, I don't want to keep going, but Chris Chelios told me one time over everything he's done, winning Stanley Cups and everything, he goes, I enjoy watching my kids play the most. And he told me that when my kids were like 2, and I didn't understand that.
Wow.
But all these years later, now I understand it, you know?
That's pretty amazing then, because that says a lot, because he had a pretty illustrious career. So
yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, John, thanks for the time, man. Armored Saint, the new record drops October 23rd, Punch in the Sky. Next time you come to Detroit, Tim and I have to take you to the Motown Museum, because like you, I've never been there either. So
yeah, I got to go there. Tim is, you know, big kudos to Tim for setting this up, and I would love to go there. I would be over the moon going to there. So I want to do that.
Armored Saint frontman and Motown fan. That's John Bush today on Talking Rock with Meltdown. And, man, what a great guy. I remember talking to him back in the day, years ago, like I mentioned in the interview. And I just knew he was just a solid, just a nice guy. And like Jay Rustin was saying, just one of the best singers. I mean, the guy is so smooth. Just put the headphones on and listen to his voice. It's just unbelievable with all the Anthrax stuff he's done. And, of course, Armored Saint, just really good. Stuff right there from John Bush. Got to thank him for the time. Like I said, the record Punch in the Sky drops on October 23rd. It sounds like a great Christmas present for Grandma on your list this year, so you can check that out coming up here in just a few weeks. In the meantime, if this is your first time listening to the podcast, we've got a lot of great guests coming up. I've got some legends, like I mentioned. I'll be talking with Rob Helford coming up next week. He's got his new book out called Confess. I'm about halfway through it right now. And I'm just getting into, I want to say they're about to record, or they just recorded their third Judas Priest album. So things are really starting to ramp up in the book as far as where I am at it, in it right now. I'm not a fast reader, so who knows? I might get it finished before talking to Rob. I might not. We'll see. Plus, I'm supposed to talk with Ace Frehley, formerly of Kiss. Of course, he's got this great covers record out, and I should be talking to him coming up here as well. So subscribe, check back often, and of course, as always, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. You can help this podcast grow by giving it a 5-star rating and writing a review on Apple and iTunes. Plus, feel free to subscribe and share it with your friends. Until next time, thanks for listening to Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' on You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.